Morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. My name is Mark Griggs. I'm an account manager here at Canada Life. And today I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague, Kim Jarvis, who's one of our technical managers and a member of our award-winning ICANN technical support team for this morning's webinar today, which we'll be looking at the reasons why you should be considering UK investment bonds as part of a holistic process for your clients. So before we get started, just a couple of quick housekeeping points to cover off. Those of you listening live this morning will get CPD certificates emailed across to you within the next 48 hours. Unfortunately, if you're listening to the recording or via the podcast, then CPD is not available. But speaking of the recordings, we'll try and get a recording of today's webinar also uploaded to the website within the next 48 hours. You'll also see you have a chat box facility on your screens. Please do raise any questions that you have as we go along, and we'll try and pick these up as we get to the end of the webinar if we have time. And there's also a section there for you to download copies of the slides plus any relevant handouts and sales aids. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Kim, who's going to talk you through the agenda for today's webinar. Kim.
Thank you, Mark. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining me today. Right. As Mark says, this is sort of why you would use a UK bond as part of your planning. What I'm going to do is look at the taxation of the bonds and the chargeable events. I'm going to look at the order of taxation, where actual chargeable gains fit in that order of taxation, a little bit on top slicing, and then just sort of advantages and disadvantages of bonds. Okay, so let's get started. Right, the first thing I'm going to look at is the taxation of the UK funds. So the funds that are held in the bond wrapper, they actually belong to us. So it's us that has the liability. It's the provider that has the liability. Now, the provider pays corporation tax, and they pay corporation tax on the income and the growth made within those funds. So if you're looking at a fund that's got rental income or interest, fixed interest stocks, you're looking at 20% on there. But you've got to remember that dividend income is now tax-free. Then you've got 20% on deemed gains. Now, people probably are aware of the indexation relief being frozen from the 31st of December last year. That was announced in the autumn statement. But effectively what that means is people think that it was for deemed gains on all disposes made within funds, but it was only for disposes of shares made in equity funds. That was the only fund that had indexation relief. So if you were disposing of a share in an interest fund, that didn't actually attract indexation relief. So effectively from a client's perspective, they won't see a change. There hasn't been much change for them because they will still get the chargeable gain come out with the 20% tax credit. But effectively, the effective rate that's been paid in the fund really is something between 16 and 18%. Just depends what that client has actually invested in. Okay, so that's the taxation of the funds. So again, we'll just go on to look at chargeable events. So chargeable events, that applies to the person, that applies to personal tax. So you can get a chargeable event on death, assignment, maturity, an excess, which we'll go on and explain a bit more about, or surrender. Now, a death chargeable event will only occur if it actually gives rise to benefits. Now, we get asked a lot of questions where, say, I'm the owner of the policy, my two children are the lives assured, and I die. Oh, is that a chargeable event? No, it wouldn't be, because no death benefit's been paid. Chargeable event will only occur on death if a death benefit has been paid. An assignment will only be a chargeable event if money has exchanged hands. So again, if I assign my policy to Mark and he decides to give me £100,000 in return for that, which would be quite nice, but it may not happen, I don't know, but that would be a chargeable event. Maturity, again, that's a termination. Again, you get maturity proceeds. Now, the excess, this is when the policy actually still continues, but you're allowed to withdraw a certain amount out each year. And if you withdraw more than that, then that would be a chargeable gain. And that's when the chargeable event would happen. But again, like I said, I'm going to go over a few examples of that. And then finally, surrender. Now, that's the surrender. It could be the surrender of the whole bond or it could be a surrender of one of the little individual policies that's actually held underneath that bond. So just things that you've got to think about. Switching between the funds is not a chargeable event. You've got to remember that it's us as the provider that owns those funds. So no money is coming out for the client if they decide to switch. Yes, we might have tax to pay on that, but there's no impact to the client because there's no chargeable event. Yes, an assignment for money and money is worth as a chargeable event, but I could gift my policy to Mark and that wouldn't be a chargeable event. And then consider if you've got joint ownership, then the chargeable gain is actually assessed on which portion that they actually hold the share of the policy in. Okay, so that's just a little bit about the chargeable events. So if we say, so what I'm going to concentrate on now is the access and when that actually occurs. So as I said, the calculation needs to be done at the end of the policy year. Okay, so at the end of the policy year, a client is allowed to take out 5% of the premiums that are actually in for that policy for that year. So what you've got to consider is, say you took out some individual policies halfway through, at the end of the year, they're not there. They're not there in order to calculate what that 5% allowance is. So you're allowed to take out 5% of the premiums for the in-force policies at the end of that policy year. You can do that until you've taken out 100% of the premiums that are in that policy. Once you've done that, then everything is a chargeable event. Now you can carry them forward, you can defer, so you don't have to take out 5% each year. So I could take out 4% for 25 years. But once, like I said, that you've exceeded that 100%, anything will be a chargeable gain. Okay, so if you just look at the timing, so because I keep banging on, I know I'm banging on about it, but a lot of people ask the question, right, I've taken a withdrawal now and I've taken 5%, I haven't got my chargeable event certificate. It happens at the end of the policy year. So again, that can be quite, you can manipulate it for planning opportunities. So if we look at this, you've got the chargeable event. It occurs on the 4th of March, 2018. Now that is in the tax year 17-18. You as an advisor might have thought, oh, he's got enough income with his chargeable gain. He'll stay a basic rate taxpayer. I'll take the withdrawal out now and the chargeable event will occur then. But that's not what happens, because with an excess, it happens at the end of the policy year. Now, the end of the policy year is the 7th of July, 2018. That actually is in the next tax year. That's in 18-19 tax year. So that's just things that you've got to consider. So if you think that your client is going to get another higher paid job, you may not want to do that. You may just want to wait until they become a basic rate taxpayer. So you there is opportunities with accesses to actually manipulate when the chargeable event can come out. So we'll just look at a few examples of this now. Okay, so we've got Mr. Smith. He invests 100,000 in an investment bond. 4.5 years later, he withdraws 36,000. Now that chargeable event happens at the end of the policy year. He's got 5 years of 5%, so he's only entitled to take out 25,000 without a chargeable gain occurring. He's taken out more, so we'll be issuing a certificate to him for 11,000. If we look at another example, again, he invests in 100,000 into a bond. So in the first year, he wants to withdraw 7,000. At the end of the year, he's only entitled to withdraw 5,000, so he gets a chargeable gain of 2,000. Then in the second year, he withdraws another 6,000. At the end of the second year, the calculation that you are doing is you're doing, he's entitled to 2 years of 5%, which is 10,000. He's actually withdrawn over those 2 years, 13,000, 7 from the first year, the 6 from the second. So at the end of the second year, he gets a chargeable gain of 11 of 1,000, beg your pardon, can't read, 11 of 1,000, okay? So that's the excess. So on death, so death is a full termination. And while on a full termination, death, maturity, surrender, you do a sweep up calculation. And what that effectively is it's everything that that client has had from that policy. So it's not just what he's receiving on death, maturity, full surrender. It also includes any previous withdrawals that he's taken from that policy. And then from that, you can take off all the premiums that he's paid in, and then any previous chargeable event certificates that have been issued for an access event. Now, you don't have to have paid tax on that access event. You just have to have received the certificate, okay? So I've got a few examples of these. So, right, these are quite straightforward. So, got the investment, 100,000. He's made no withdrawals, surrender value, 250,000. And everyone can yell at their PC what the answer is. It is 150,000 gain. If we go on to a slightly harder one, you've got 100,000 investment. He's been taking the 5% withdrawals for 10 years. The surrender value's 190,000. Again, you can do the calculation before I continue. You've got the 190,000. Remember, it's a sweep up calculation you do. He's also had 50,000 of withdrawals over those 10 years. And then he can take off the premium that he's paid in, and we'll be issuing a certificate for 140,000 for him. And the final one, he's been taking 6% withdrawals for 10 years, and the surrender value is 180,000. Okay. Again, I'll leave it a little bit to see whether you can do the calculation. Right, so he's done sweep up calculation. He's had 180 as the surrender value. He's been taking 6% for 10 years, so that's the 60,000. But remember, with an access, you can only take up to 5% each year. So for those 10 years, the provider would have been issuing a certificate showing a previous gain of 1,000, and that can then be taken off. So he ends up with a certificate for the final termination of 130,000 gain. Okay? Right, so if we just look at death, so again, one of the questions that we get asked is, on death, why do you use the surrender value immediately before death when you calculate the chargeable event? Now, the reason why HMRC say that is HMRC want to actually tax the profit that has been made. They want to not include any any additional benefits that the provider will give for that death. And that's why they use the surrender value immediately before death, because that's what will show the true profit. So that's the chargeable events. I've shown when a chargeable event will occur. I've shown how you calculate the chargeable gain, but who is it actually assessed on? Who is that liability assessed to? So an individual is liable for the tax if they're a UK resident in the tax year in which the gain arises, and they beneficially own that policy. And what that means is, if I own a policy, it's not in trust, I'm that beneficial owner, okay? If a policy is in trust, if it's under a bearer trust, what HMRC say you can do is you can look through that bearer trust, and it's actually the beneficiary, because they're the ones that own those beneficial rights, that will be taxed. But what you've got to remember is the parental settlement rules. So, and what that means is, if I take out a policy, put it under a bearer trust for my minor unmarried children, then any chargeable gain is actually assessed on me, okay? But it's only for parents. Again, we get asked a lot of questions that I've got a grandparent that wants to take out a bearer trust for a minor child. The tax point would be on the grandparent. No, the parental settlement rules only apply to parents. So again, that's quite a good, it's quite a good planning tool that you can use when if you've got grandparents that want to provide money for their grandchildren. Now, the other way that an individual will be liable for the tax, if those rights are held under a non-charitable trust, as in a discretionary trust, and that individual created that trust. Okay, so if you just look at that a little more closely. So, got a policy gain. The first point of taxation would be the settlor if they're alive in the tax year and they're a UK resident. Now, if they've died in a previous tax year or they're not UK resident, then they'll look to tax the trustees. Now, trustees, they have the basic rate standard band of up to 1,000, and that's taxed at 0%. Anything above that is taxed at 45%. And remember, unlike individuals, a trust can't use top slicing relief. And then if you've got trustees, they're not UK resident, they'll look to tax any UK beneficiaries. So you can see that they try and get the tax somehow. So that's who's taxed. What I want to do now is, so we've gone through when the chargeable event happens, when you get a gain, who's it actually liable to? So now, how is it actually taxed? Which order is it taxed in when a client is filling in their self-assessment form? So the first thing that you look at is you look at earned income. You look at non-savings income, and that's income from employment. It could be pensions. It could be rental income. And that's the first set of income that uses the personal allowance. Then the next set that you look at is you look at savings income, and that's your bank, your building society savings income. It's also gains from life insurance policies without a tax credit. And then if you've got any personal allowance left, it's used against the savings income. Then you may be able to use the starting rate, the 5,000 starting rate band, and also the personal savings allowance. Then you look at dividend income, that sits on top of the savings income. Then at the highest part of the income are gains on life assurance policies with a tax credit. So effectively, you can see that international and offshore bond is savings income. Now, a UK bond, an onshore bond, is still savings income, but because it comes out with this tax credit, this 20% tax credit, it sits on the top of all the rest of the income. Okay, so I'm going to look at a few examples of the order of taxation, but just before I do that, we just need to consider a few more points that some advisors sort of forget sometimes. And one of these is personal allowances. So the first thing that you need to do is you need to work out a client's entitlement to personal allowances. Now, it's the whole of the gain that you use to work out the personal allowance. So again, I get asked questions. I've had a client that's had a policy for 10 years. A gain is coming out with 100,000. That's fine. It's an onshore bond with top slicing. They'll stay a basic rate taxpayer. But you've got to remember that it's the 100,000 that you add to the client's income to work out their entitlement to the personal allowance. So in that situation, you could lose some of the personal allowance. But one good thing is that if you take the 5%, remember 5% withdrawals, it's not a chargeable gain. So there'd be nothing. So you can get that money out. It's not added to the income when you're working out your personal allowance. And similarly, it's not included for state benefit means testing. But that's just one thing that you've got to be aware of, especially when you've got clients that you're dealing with policies that they've had for 15, 20 years. And yes, with top slicing, fine, they won't pay any tax, but they could lose their personal allowance, which means that they could pay more on their earned income. And then just the other point I want to look at, just before I look at the interaction and the order of taxation, is just the dividend allowance. So first 2,000 of your dividend income is taxed at 0%. Before April 2018, that was 5,000. It went down in 2018 to 2,000. Okay, so effectively what that means is if you've got a collective and you've got a dividend yield of 3.5%, then the portfolio, your client could have held a portfolio before April 2018 of 142,857. But if you still want to keep within the dividend allowance, that portfolio has to have gone down to 57,143. Now, the dividend allowance, it can utilise the basic higher rate. It just totally depends where that dividend income sits. And then depends whether you're basic, higher or additional, what actually tax rate that you pay. Okay. So I just want to go through a few examples on the impact that a chargeable gain can have on your dividend allowance and what rate of tax that you actually pay. So remember that there's no income, there's no dividend income, they're all received tax-free in the funds. Because the international bonds come out without a tax credit and they sit under the dividend income, they could impact what rate you pay. Because UK bonds sit at the highest part, they don't impact, okay? So if we just run through a few examples. Right, so I've got a client, they've got non-savings income, okay? So they've got non-savings income of 16,850. So it uses the personal allowance. Remember, the starting rate band is like a floating band that's in the basic rate. So earned income can actually use it up and take it away from your savings income, which is effectively what's happening here. So on the earned income, you've got 20% up to the starting rate band. He's then got dividend income. He's got no chargeable gains at the moment, so that dividend income sits on top. He's a basic rate taxpayer. You've got 0% at 2,000. The rest of it is at 7.5%. Now, if you factor in that your client's now, he has fully surrendered an international bond and he's got a chargeable gain that's come out on that. He's got the same non-savings income, 0%, 20%, but then the savings income comes next. So that chargeable gain sits on top of the earned income. He can use the personal savings allowance, the 1,000, which is taxed at 0%. The rest of it then is taxed at 20%. Then the dividend income sits on top. You still get the 2,000 at 0%, the 2,000 allowance, but he's now looking at having to pay higher rate tax on his dividend income because he realized this offshore bond gain, okay? So if we change that, that's true, sorry. And yeah, because he's gone into the high rate tax bracket, then the personal savings allowance is actually reduced to 500 as well. So if we now look at a UK bond, he's got the same earned income and the dividend income then sits. So that's exactly the same. Okay, so same clients, but he now realises a UK bond gain. Now, UK bond gains sit at the highest part of your income. So that sits on top, doesn't impact his dividend rate. He still pays 7.5%. Because it comes out with the 20% tax credit, up to the basic rate band is 0%. Anything above that would be 20%. But remember, you've got the potential that with top slicing, it can be brought underneath. Okay. And that's the next thing that I just want to go on to, top slicing. So chargeable gain forms the top slice of an individual's income. And what the revenue realise is that, yes, the haul gain comes out, but that haul gain wasn't made in that 1 year. They know that it's been made over a number of years. And that's why they allow the individual to actually spread the risk over the complete years that the policy is actually run from. But one thing you've got to consider is if it's a full termination, as in maturity, full surrender, death, you always go back to the start of the policy. But when you're dealing with an excess gain, you go back to the previous chargeable event or to inception. So in other words, the example that I showed earlier on where the client was taking 6% withdrawals each year. So on year two, when he took his next 6% out, the number of years for top slicing would be one, and it would be on like that for everything because he took 6% out for those 10 years. Okay. So we just look excess gain commencement date. So when that first excess gain occurs, you've got top slicing for 3 years. But then if he takes another one in 5 years, top slicing the complete years would be two. So we're going to go a few, we're just going to go over how you calculate it, but I just want to recap just what the personal allowance for this year is 11,850. The basic rate band is the 34,500. And then higher rate is up to 150. Anything over that is additional. But remember, you've got the personal savings allowance, which can be 1,000 or 500, depending if you're a higher. Additional doesn't get any personal savings allowance. And then you can also have the starting rate band, the 5,000 starting rate band. So if we just look at a few examples on when a chargeable event has happened under an onshore bond. So he invests, Mr. Smith invests 50,000. After 5 years, 6 months, he surrenders the bond and he has a chargeable, he has a surrender value of 75,000. Now his income for that year is 25,000. Now, the chargeable gain is 25,000. So that will take him into the higher rate tax bracket. So top slicing is only of benefit if you move brackets, either basic to higher or higher to additional. But the first thing that you've got to look at is, does it affect his personal allowance? And the answer to that is no, it doesn't. So you've got the 25,000 added to his income, he's underneath the 100,000. But top slicing can be a benefit because he's moved into the higher rate tax bracket. So for top slicing, it's complete years. And so it's only 5 complete years that that's been running for. The top slice gain, 5,000. When that's added to his income, he stays a basic rate taxpayer. So there's no tax liability. There's no extra tax liability. Okay. Now, again, one thing that you can think about is because it's complete years that you use for top slicing, if you have a client that is thinking of surrendering a bond and say, you know, it was 5 years, 11 months, it might be more sensible to wait another month to get some more, another complete year. So if you look at another example, so he invests 50,000 again, he surrenders after 5 years, 6 months, and the surrender value now is 80,000. But he's got taxable income of 44,000. So the first thing again you've got to think about is, does it affect his personal allowance? The whole of the gain is 30,000. When added to his income, it keeps him under the 100,000, so it doesn't affect his personal lines. But he does move tax brackets. So again, top slicing would be of benefit. So you've got top slice gain, or the top slice gain is 6,000. When that's added to his income, it's 50,000. So then what you've got to work out is the extra tax liability that he's got. So effectively, there is 730 extra tax that he's got to pay. So that is the bit that's above the basic rate band. And because it's coming out with the 20% tax credit, he's only got another 20% to pay on that. But one thing you've got to remember is that that is for the years, or for 1 year that that policy's been in force. So then you've got to multiply it up by the 5 to actually get what his liability is. So if he surrendered this bond, he'd have higher rate tax liability of 3,650. So the next thing I just want to look at is just a few examples on releasing capital. So should you take withdrawals? Should you take full segment surrenders? The bonds are normally made up of individual segments. Effectively, what we normally say is if the accumulated 5% allowance covers the amount that your client needs, we'd use that. And the reason why we'd say that is because it keeps the policies intact. Because once you surrender segments, then you're losing those policies. You're losing the entitlement to those 5% under those policies as well. But if it's going to be an unrealistic chargeable gain that results by taking the 5% allowance, then the other solution, yes, to do policy segment surrenders. Or you could do a bit of both, which the next couple of samples I'll show with you. So you're going to invest 100,000, 100 policies over 4 years. She wants a payment of 45,000. Okay. Now, she wants that payment in years, fifth year. The current value is only 90,000. If she surrendered by withdrawals, she'd actually get a chargeable event of 20,000. And that's irrespective of what the value of that policy is worth. Because remember, the 5% are worked out on the premiums that you put into the policy. Okay. But what she could do is she could surrender 50 of those policies. And that would have no chargeable gain because the current value of those policies was less than what she put in. But remember, you're giving up the 5% allowance for those 50 policies that you have surrendered. So it might be better to maybe fully surrender, say, 31 of the policies and then surrender part from within the 5%. So you can see that you can, combination of both might be the best solution. So in this situation, you're actually keeping more policies in force to either hopefully to grow. So if you look at another one where the current value has actually gone up, again, fourth year, she wants to withdraw 60,000. Now that policy has only been going for 4 years. They're only entitled to 20,000 5% allowance. So they'd generate a chargeable gain of 40,000, but could surrender 50 policies and that would generate a chargeable gain of 10,000. So that's the 60,000 minus the 50 that went in. Or similarly, you could do a combination of both. So if you fully surrender 40 policies, you get a chargeable gain of 8,000. And then you could take the rest as a part surrender, which would be within the 5% of the remaining policies. Okay. So that's just like a recap or sort of overview on chargeable events and how they're taxed, what you can do. So advantages of UK bonds. So yes, they don't produce income, which obviously means that any income tax assessments for the time being can be minimal. So self-assessment, it could be limited. If they stay within the 5%, then it'd only be on termination. An assignment, being able to assign by gift, it's not a chargeable event and it's not a disposal. So it's a really good tool when you're looking to benefit young adults. You've got the assets are underpinning the wrapper. They can be swapped, they can be changed without resulting in a chargeable event for the client. You can manage it. The management of those funds can be carried out. They can be sort of hassle-free, minimum fast. And hopefully, in turn, it could actually enhance the benefits. But with advantages, there is always disadvantages. So, and perhaps the major criticism of any bond is not being able to use the client's chargeable capital gains tax exemption. Sorry about that. But it just gives the client the opportunity to use that elsewhere. So, because bonds you don't use in isolation. Investment losses, yes, once realised, they can't be set against other gains and they can't be carried forward. But again, they could be using them elsewhere. If they've got another portfolio, like Mark and I were saying earlier on, bonds should be used as a package. They shouldn't be used in isolation. Yes, the tax can't be reclaimed by non-taxpayers. But again, it's a simple solution. You can't use a dividend alliance. It is there is a lot of sort of advantages and disadvantages against bonds. But really, what I'm sort of trying to get across is that each individual client is different. Tax shouldn't be used as in isolation. There is other various things that they want. And with that, I will hand back to Mark.
Thanks, Kim. That's fantastic. I hope everyone found that useful. A lot of information there, which ties in nicely to what I'd like to talk about, which is just some of the support that we can give you guys as advisors when you're writing this kind of business, really, as well as business across all our business lines. So just as you can see on the screen there, there's a range of support material that we provide. This is all available via our websites. So there's a whole range of brochures that will provide you a lot of information around tax benefits and that sort of thing. We produce newsletters. There's a regular technical eye, which is a sort of quarterly newsletter that we send out, briefing notes, budget summaries, techcast webinars, all that sort of thing. In addition to that, Candid Life are now one of the few UK providers who still offer you dedicated field-based and centrally based account managers who can help you with any aspects of writing your business. And of course, don't forget our award-winning ICANN team, who Kim is a member of, staffed by experts across all of our business lines, available to you via telephone and email, and hopefully able to answer any questions that you might have. Finally, as many of you will be aware, voting for the Financial Advisor Service Awards is currently open. If you have used us in the last year and you've appreciated the help and support you've got from us, and you haven't voted yet, we'd really appreciate your support by asking you to vote for us. The voting link, as you can see, is on your screens there. And I believe voting closes next Friday, which is the 13th. So we've had a question raised. So we'll just pick this one up. There was some suggestion that the number of years for top rate slicing could be restricted if there had been a recent chargeable event. Can you please clarify? I think this is probably looking back at with multiple chargeable events, where do we count back to for the top slicing?
So there was a change. I don't know whether you might be thinking about for international bonds, because with an international bond, irrespective of what the event was, you could always go back to the beginning. But that changed in 2013, and it became the same as an onshore one. So effectively, when you're looking at an excess event, and you've had a previous access event, you can only go back to that event. You only ever go back to the start if it's on full termination or it's the first access event.
Fantastic, thanks Kim. Just one second one here. If a bond is assigned as a gift, how does it count for the donor's IHT?
So if I wanted to assign my policy to Mark as a gift, he'd probably be quite appreciative of that, but I would be making a potentially exempt transfer to him. So if I died within 7 years, then he might have tax to pay on it.
That's Fantastic. Thanks. I look forward to receiving that. So thanks everybody for listening. I think we'll leave it there. But if you would like to discuss any sort of writing UK investment bonds, talking those as a solution for your clients, then obviously first instance contact your Canada Life account manager. You'll also see on the screen there contact details for our UK and international support and technical teams, who are always happy to answer any questions that you might have. Finally, there will be a short survey for you to complete as you exit the webinar. So we do thank you for any feedback that you can give us on that. We'll switch the audio off now, but we will leave the question box open. So if you do still have any questions that you'd like to raise, please do continue to follow those through and we'll get back to you on those as quickly as we can. Finally, thank you again for your time this morning and we hope you join us next time. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.